You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Great college basketball venues in the nation. UD Arena.
And welcome back to Talking Out Loud. I am your host, Drew, coming to you live from my living room. On today's program, we have the voice of the Dayton Flyers. Larry Hanskin joins us live from Orlando to discuss Dayton season so far. This weekend coming up in Orlando, we chop it up about a little Dayton football, and we kind of peel back the curtain of some of the 9 years of the Anthony Grant era. So that will be coming up later on in the show. Just wanted to get a brief, little intro up here before we get to Larry. Last time we recorded, it was with Mo Egger. It was after the Marquette game. Dayton had won that game. They played North Carolina Central. Dayton wins the game 74-55. That's pretty non-consequential. Dayton was up large. It was 7-7 at one point in the game. And then next time I looked up, it was 67-22. Final score, 74-55. Dayton, played the kids down the stretch. North Carolina Central made that score look way closer than it needed to be, which chapped a lot of people's ass a little bit in A-10 Twitter land, which, let's be real here, people. The A-10's only going to get one or two teams into this tournament at most. That's the reality we need to live in. So, the whole, that was bad for the A-10. Who cares? Who cares if Dayton didn't beat North Carolina Central by 30? Dayton is not going to miss the tournament because they didn't beat North Carolina Central by 30. It's just not how it works. Look, I get it. It looks good for the metrics. You know what else looks good for metrics? Beating good teams, winning on the road. That's good for metrics. Beating Georgetown in an MTE, beating Miami or BYU in an MTE, beating Florida State at home, beating Virginia and Charlotte, winning on the road at the good A-10 venues like VCU and Bonaventure and other teams like that. That is what changes your resume, not beating North Carolina Central by 25 or 19. It doesn't matter. What mattered was the product on the floor when the players that mattered were on the floor. And when the players that mattered were on the floor, Dayton looked really, really good. Now, nobody's going to confuse North Carolina Central as being a good basketball team because they weren't. They weren't. They were not a good team. But you know what? Coming off of a road win against Marquette for a Saturday, 2:00 tip, kind of sleepy time slot. And you know what? Dayton was sloppy for the first 4 minutes of the game. But then they turned it on, and then they played really well. They played really well. Coming off of turning the ball over 25 times the prior Wednesday, they only turned it over 7. They shot the ball pretty well. They were 27 of 63 from the field for 43%. Free throw shooting continues to be a bit of an issue. They were 11 of 19. And then they were 9 of 32 from three. But I think a lot of that was, you know, guys chucking shots when they were already up by 24 points. Thought they were efficient in the first half. Thought they played really well in the first half and the first part of the second half, too. So, you know, that's kind of where that's really all I need to discuss about the Dayton North, you know, North Carolina Central game. Now, you know, it's put your big boy pants on time. It's, you got Georgetown this week. Georgetown's been pretty good this year. They've got a couple good wins in. They're 5-0 going into this game. They beat Clemson 79-74. They beat Maryland 70-60. How good those teams are, I don't know. They're averaging close to 83 points a game, 82.2. They average 15.2 assists. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for Dayton. And, you know, right now Dayton sits at 70 in KenPom, and Georgetown sits at 79. So in reality, Dayton, from a KenPom standpoint, Dayton's favored in this game. Now, you know, I don't know if the betting line has come out at the time of recording this, and I would imagine Georgetown would probably be a slight favorite, maybe a 2-3 point favorite if I had to guess, neutral floor. There'll probably be more Dayton people down there than Georgetown people. That's where, you know, the Dayton's resume comes down to about six games in the non-con. And I kind of briefly touched on this in the last episode. You basically, you know, you didn't get UC, but you got Marquette. You need to get one of these two, and then you need to get one of Florida State in Charlotte. Now, you get Florida State at home. That's a game you need to win. Florida State's a game you need to win. And if you can beat Georgetown, then, and I talk about this with Larry, then you get the opportunity at the super-duper quad one win in BYU. And if you lose to BYU, there's no shame in that. BYU's really, really good. They have maybe the best player in the country. They're number 11 in KenPom right now. But you want an opportunity to play those teams. It's like a couple years ago when Dayton got to play Houston. Sure, they lost the game by double digits, but they fought. They played hard. They played decently well. They just got their asses whooped on the boards. And that was the difference in the basketball game. But I think Dayton was a better team because of it, for playing in that game against Houston. So if you beat Georgetown, more than likely you're going to get a shot at a top 10, 15 team, a good Big 12 team again in BYU. So that's why these weekends are so important. And that's why these tournaments are so important for Dayton. And especially in today's day and age where this player era festival nonsense is going on right now in Las Vegas. And every major college basketball media member will tell you how great this is for the sport of college basketball. I don't necessarily agree with that. It is out in Vegas, a city that just loves to take your money. And, you know, I'm not a Vegas hater by any means. I've only been to Las Vegas one time. I really enjoyed my time there. But, you know, these games just don't feel big. And this tournament, which is only in its second year of operation, there's no history tied. Can you tell me who played in the players era tournament last year? Who was the championship? Who won it? Can you remember? I can't. You know, I don't even know who's freaking playing in the semifinals today, because it's not a bracket. It's just, well, you know, we're going to determine by record and point differential who moves on. And I think that's really, really dumb. I think that's stupid. And it sucks, because you know what? Here's the dirty little secret. Dayton is never going to be invited to that tournament. If they get invited to that tournament, you can come back to this podcast and then you can point and laugh at me on social media. But I'll stick my neck out on this and say this. Dayton will never be invited to the Players Era tournament. They won't. And the bigger and bigger this event gets, the word is that it's going to 32 teams next year. Dayton's opportunities to play in these November tournaments is going to change. And it's going to, you know, you're probably not going to get a crack at a lot of the best teams in the country at these things anymore, because they're all going to be playing out in Vegas at some court that's got 50 million sponsorships on it. And, you know, the Big 12 purchased a 15% stake in this event. They're going to get like 8 teams into this thing next year. It's just going to be a Power 4 powwow. It was like, oh, let's all play each other on this neutral court in Las Vegas. And sure, the kids are getting NIL money. Great. Cool. They're already making millions anyway. You know, what's an extra couple, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever the hell they're going to make by going to this tournament. So, you know, it's one thing to have this event. If you just had this event and people were like, hey, you know, this event is going on out in Las Vegas. It's new. We're trying new things. You know, the bracket thing I still think is stupid, but it's you know, I can at least praise them for being bold and trying something different. It's dumb. They should go back to the bracket. But at the end of the day, they're trying something new. But it is the incessant, you know, badgering from college basketball media members trying to tell fans what they should enjoy. You know, you have your own opinion. I have mine. I've watched the games, you know, when they've been on TV. I haven't been locked in. I haven't watched every second of every game. I caught a little bit of Michigan and Auburn last night. I caught Houston and Tennessee yesterday. I watched a little bit of Gonzaga and Maryland. And, you know, it just looks like a normal neutral site game at an NBA arena or what have you. And, you know, I think it's a bummer. And, you know, I don't really enjoy the tournament aspect of it, which is what makes this Feast Week so fun. And it's a bummer. And then I've got Jeff Goodman yelling in my ear how this is the future of college basketball. And this is if you don't like it, get used to it. Like all these media members trying to tell me and you, the listener, how to enjoy college basketball. And it's like, you should like this thing. It's like, well, you know what? I kind of hate it. And I hate what it's doing. I hate what it's done to Maui. Maui isn't the same anymore because of it. You know, the Orlando, it's like three separate four team events in Orlando now. Charleston is what it is. And it's, you know, it really is a bummer that this is the road that college basketball is going down. But, you know, when you open Pandora's box of all this NIL stuff, this is what's going to happen. And let me be 100%, 1,000% clear here. I am for these players getting paid and getting what they deserve for what they bring and the money that they bring into these universities. These kids have earned the right to get paid for their services. But that doesn't mean that I don't like the direction that the sport as a whole is going in. You know, we're talking about NCAA tournament expansion. I don't like that either. So that's kind of my rant on the Players Era Festival and where Dayton fits into all that. We'll see. You know, maybe they will get invited out there someday, but I just don't really see it happening. So on that note, we'll end the little intro here for this. On today's show, we have the voice of, as I said, the voice of the Flyers, Larry Hanskin, joins us live from Orlando. We talk about, you know, 25 minutes or so. Didn't want to take too much of Larry's time. I know he's very busy right now, and he's probably spending his time today. You know, he probably has his free time today before having to call the game tomorrow. So without further ado, the voice of the Dayton Flyer basketball team, Larry Hanskin. All right. We now welcome on a very special guest, a voice that many people on this podcast will recognize and know. He's the voice of your Dayton Flyers men's basketball and football teams. He's joining us live from Orlando, Florida, Larry Hanskin. Larry, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Drew. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course, of course. You know, we're 6 games in. We've reached the ever-important mid-season November tournament for the Dayton Flyers. They're 5-1 with a win over Marquette and the loss to Cincinnati. You know, you've seen this team up close for almost every game. You know, what are kind of your thoughts, opinions, and, you know, experiences with this Dayton basketball team so far?
I think I knew going in that Javon Bennett was going to be solid and be better than he had been. Not that, you know, I mean, he's incrementally better. And that's what you expect out of a senior third year in a program. So his play has not surprised me. It's been what is expected, maybe a little even better, but he's played very, very well. I knew Keontae Jones was going to be impactful immediately. And the only thing that surprised me was that he was on a milk carton for the entire regulation at Marquette, and then he was Superman in overtime. So obviously I'd like to see him be a little bit more consistent. Amiel Letong, I think spending the summer overseas playing for his national team hurt him, because that was not a summer he could spend in the weight room and getting bigger. And he still plays on skates a little bit, but he's gotten better, but just not, I don't think he's taken that big freshman to sophomore step that I hoped he would. DeShane Montgomery has surpassed any expectations I had for him. I mean, I know he was good. He looked good in practice and everything, and his stats were okay at Georgia. They were really good at Mount St. Mary's, but he's just been a terrific player, and I just see an incredible upside to him getting better, not just year to year as a junior, that next year he could be even better. I see him being a better player in February than he is right now. And then Jordan Durkak, him moving into the starting lineup, it wasn't so much a change in the starting lineup going from Jacob Connor to Jordan. I think it was the plan all along that he's going to be starting. It was just delayed due to some physical injury setbacks he had. So that being said, you know, looking at kind of your starting five there, and I think the bench play they're getting has been terrific. You know, in this day and age, it's good to have some loyalty guys.
Yeah, no doubt.
You got Jayon Simon, who's just, you know, all he cares about is the program. He cares about Dayton basketball. He's not caring about, he doesn't care about Jayon Simon, college basketball player. He cares about Dayton basketball. And it shows out there. You know, even though he didn't begin his career at Dayton, I think you can throw Jacob Connor in that same group as someone who he cares about the team. You know, he cares about the team, and he's really a team first type of guy. And then so you look at some of the new guys. I think Bryce Hurd is finding his way. You know, he played so little at North Carolina State that he's almost like a freshman. Malcolm Thomas is a freshman. He had a breakout week last week. So, yeah, just kind of ran through everybody there real quick. But, yeah, I mean, kind of the impressions I've had of this team so far.
Yeah, I've come away very impressed with Malcolm Thomas. I think he's got a chance to really expand his role here over in the coming months. Because like you said, Letong is, you know, he's gotten off to a slow start this year. And, you know, I think the playing with his national team thing as opposed to being in the weight room is an interesting thought I never really had, and how that may have stunted his development a little bit. But I, like, you know, you go to practice, you see coach every day. Is Malcolm Thomas, is this someone that the program feels like could be that next big, you know, player for the University of Dayton down the road?
Yeah, I really think they think he's got a huge upside because, you know, because last year, you know, he didn't play at all. And so he spent a year watching college basketball, and I think that's helped. And I think that, you know, he's got some ability, but he's also got some physical tools, some strength. And I think he's shown himself to be a pretty good finisher through contact, catching the ball in traffic, rebounding the ball, you know, when he's, you know, got other guys, you know, battling him for it. So, gosh, it's an interesting mix. You know, really, in this day and age of roster building, you don't call it recruiting anymore. It's roster building.
Right, exactly.
That, you know, we actually have a team that's got some veterans, and then you've got some guys that could develop within the program. And it would not be, you know, it would not be unheralded in this the Anthony Grant system for that to happen. Because if you look at how far some guys like – Well, you know, Obi Toppin. I mean, dare you bring up his name? But he goes from being a, you know, an academic redshirt to being the player of the year in the country in 2 years. Kobe Brea goes from being a guy who's got a bad wrist and just doesn't even really play much during the COVID year in 2021 to becoming the best 3-point shooter in the nation. So there is a history for guys, you know, coming here and getting better and growing within the program. And even though they may not be, you know, wear the jersey for 4 years, you know, they either go pro or, you know, in Brea's case, you know, spent last year he had eligibility in Kentucky. But no, there's a track record for taking guys and making them better.
No doubt. And, you know, you talked about Grant, so that's a nice little transition for what I want to talk about next. He's in year 9 here, which is kind of hard to believe that we're already in the 9th season of the Anthony Grant era. You know, like I said, you're up close. You see him a lot. You interview him after every game. How has he evolved since that first year into year 9? Like, how has he kind of evolved the way he's done things? And then, you know, what are some things that he still does from year 1 that haven't really changed?
I think, you know, I think the thing is that if you were to ask him, how's it feel to be in your 9th year, he'd be maybe taken back and say, wow, has it been that long, really? Because he's kind of a take one year at a time type of guy. So I think he's really wired well for this day and age in which we live to, you know, ask players, give me 10 months. I want a 10-month commitment from you. And then we'll both reevaluate at the end. I think that how he has evolved is that I just think that he has kept standards, high standards, when it isn't easy to do so. So it's not that he has changed as much as he's maintained. And I look back to his very first year, which was a losing season, and you know, he refused to give in order to just win games. And he could have, and he did. And I'm not saying that he, you know, said, okay, I'll show you guys. I'm not going to play you. You know, I don't care. I don't care if we win or lose. I'm not going to play you because you're being a turd. And I don't know that that was the message, but it was tacit. And I think those guys who stayed with the program and became actually a part of that 29-2 team, they saw it. They saw, you know, a guy that's not going to compromise. And so the fact that they've been able to do that, I think is unique as a staff. And I think, you know what, I think every year they learn a little bit more. I mean, last year they got burned a little bit last year, in as far as putting together a team from a chemistry standpoint. Some of the things were kind of out of their control. I think if Deuce had made his commitment to the NBA earlier, it would have freed up some NIL money that they could have used for someone else. And you know, at the time, you know, no big guy wanted to come here because, well, I'm not going to come sit behind Ron Holmes. So he kind of waits late. Now, all of a sudden, they're scrambling to get a roster. And, you know, they get Zed Key. And Zed Key's, he was okay. He was a nice enough guy. Kind of thought like, yeah, I've got my degree at Ohio State. I'll go play another year at Dayton. What the heck? And, you know, he lives off campus, takes one class online. You know, he just sees his teammates at practice and games. You know, is he really? And like I say, not a bad guy at all. A Posh Alexander, similar situation. And I think they went with the fact that they had recruited him all the way back in high school and thought that they had a relationship with him, thought they knew him, that they thought that that would be a good fit. And it did not turn out to be a good fit at all, basketball-wise, chemistry-wise, in any way. And, you know, it doesn't take much. And I'll go all the way back to Anthony's very first year when a lot of guys left the program. And one of them was John Crosby. And I thought, and I said, I'm kind of surprised that Crosby left. And well, the implication was, I'm kind of surprised that you asked Crosby to leave. And he said, you know, I said, he's a good guy, plays hard. And he goes, yeah. He goes, John's type of guy, if you walk past him on a playground, you go, wow, that guy can play. Now you put him in a system and he doesn't. And he said, I'll agree with you. He's a good kid and he plays hard. He goes, but as long as you have one guy on your roster who's sitting on that bench and thinks he's getting screwed, you got a problem. And you can't have that. You can't have that. And if you look at, you know, since then, we've not had that situation, except maybe a little bit last year with Posh.
Well, and that was the one thing I watched, you know, it was within the first two games of this year, the Canisius and UMBC game. I watched the game, I watched the players and how they played with each other. And I went, this team makes way more sense than last year's team. It just fit. It just looked better. It looked fluid. It looked like they enjoy playing together. And that's even become even more apparent as we've gotten from, we're only in November here. So I think this team has room to grow. I think they have room to get a lot better as we move forward. And obviously this weekend's a big opportunity, which leads me into my next question. You know, you play Georgetown on Thanksgiving night, a team similarly rated to Marquette, if I had to guess. What's the message? What is, you know, is it like we need to get this one, guys, or is it, you know, one game at a time, try and get this one. If you don't, we got another opportunity afterwards. But if you win this one, you're probably going to get a crack at a top 10 team in BYU.
I think the message has been, and I don't expect it to change, is to treat each game as a unique challenge. And I almost think that the approach has more to do with, let's not have a three-game A-10 losing streak in January that derails a top 25 season after having great success, you know, in Maui, just one win, but, you know, played really well, only to have all that be for naught by losing three A-10 games to bottom tier teams back in January, and that basically torpedoed the season. So I think the lesson learned from that is that he being Anthony and his staff are really focusing on that every game, that every opponent deserves their complete attention and importance, and to respect opponents, respect the game, you know, and give it your all every night, not just because you might be familiar with the name on the front of the jersey.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, with it being in Orlando, you know, last year, obviously you're in Maui, you're in Orlando this year. And obviously with this big Players Era Festival tournament is going on right now in Las Vegas, which every college media member wants to tell you is the best thing since sliced bread. You know, things are probably going to change for Dayton when it comes to this sort of thing. And hopefully they can kind of adapt. I feel like Dayton has done a good job of adapting with the times and when they've gotten to these, you know, situations. You know, what are some areas that feel different going into this one? And then, you know, and at the same time, it's like, you know, we've been doing this for the last, you know, however many years. We play some event in November and it's always been that way. You know, what are some of the, how is the team juggling something like this now?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens next. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens here in 2 days, just getting a chance to play two games, not three, you know, four team field instead of the eight team field. Will they come away as a staff and as an administration and say, okay, was this worth it? Was this worth it? I think the answer is probably going to be yes, because it's still the only way that Dayton can get games against Power Five teams is in this type of setting. But I think the days of I can remember it was in Orlando that the first time we were in Orlando, and I think I can't remember the exact year, but I mean, Neil Sullivan brought down the marching band, the cheerleader. So they brought down everybody down. Played Iowa like a noon game that very first day.
And I remember this game.
Iowa comes out and they've got parents and girlfriends sit behind the bench, and the rest of the gym is filled with Dayton people and cheerleaders and pep band and everything. And all of a sudden, Iowa's down 10, and they never recovered and beat them. You know, I'm going to go, okay, Neil Sullivan, that win, you got that win that season.
Yeah.
And I go up at halftime just to get something to eat, and I see, you know, and it wasn't that year because it was the year that Tim Wobbler was still the AD, so it would have been prior to that. But then, nevertheless, we had a tremendous turnout, and I'm walking up to get something to eat, and I see an ESPN guy talking to Tim Wobbler, and he says, hey, you've got a standing invitation to our events. Standing invitation. And that's when that whole four-year cycle began of Orlando, Bahamas, Charleston, Maui, rinse and I just don't know. I don't know if that's going to be able to continue.
Sadly. Yeah, which is a shame because those are a lot of fun. But at the same time, it feels like college basketball is beginning to swing back towards more home and home games, despite this little players' era festival or whatever. You know, Dayton plays Florida State. They just wrapped up a series with Marquette. UC comes to the arena again next year. Feels like I've seen some more home and home games. You know, it feels like these teams are a little more – now Marquette might be thinking differently now after taking two losses to the Dayton Flyers, but it feels like Dayton's ability to get people to come to the arena is going to get a little easier, for lack of a better word that I can find. What do you think about all that?
I think it is, and here's the reason why. And the ability to schedule next year is incumbent upon how you perform this year.
Right.
The thing is that at one point in time, you just can't be a bad loss. It used to gall me. I'd be watching the lead up to Selection Sunday, and they'd be talking about some team. They go, well, you know, they did lose to Dayton.
Right.
That was a bad loss on their resume. So I think the program has grown beyond that. I don't think it's considered to be a bad loss. Got the opposite problem now, which is not a problem. You get everybody's best shot. But hey, you know, that comes with the territory.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what, though? Like, if you're a program and you want to be taken serious, you want to be that kind of program, then you want to take everybody's best shot. You want to be at the head of the table and have that, you know, have that target on your back. And you know, that's when you find out what a team is really made of, when you've got to go on the road to a George Washington or a George Mason or Bonaventure, and you know that you're going to get their best shot. Or when they come to the arena, you know, it's probably the biggest gym that a lot of these kids will ever play in is UD. So it's, you know, it's one thing to be at the top. It's another to withstand that and get through all those things. So that's, you know, that's kind of, is there anything else like with this year's team that, you know, fans should look for, or, you know, kind of what's something you're keeping your eye on this weekend?
Well, I think the biggest thing I'm going to look for is, can they physically compete?
Yeah.
Are they going to be, you know, are they going to get pushed around and manhandled? I thought last year's team got exposed by the UC game and then exploited thereafter. You know, just got killed by big physical guards. A guy that's 6'6" and, you know, 6'6", 220 and 38 years old and can turn the corner and you know, and dunk on you and then show off for his grandkids afterwards. And I think that even though we lost at Cincinnati, we did not get physically manhandled in that game. And maybe one of the best things that happened in that game was when Jordan Dirkhack just would not take any crap and about got in a fight, you know, ended up the technical foul was called on the UC player. And, you know, Jordan became an immediate villain to UC fans. And I think he's an instant hero to Dayton fans. I'm anxious to see if physically this team is going to compete against whoever they, well, against Georgetown and then against either Miami or BYU on Friday. I guess we did at Marquette. We were way up top, and so it kind of looked like a foul. But you can see some things better, but up there you just don't have any idea. Just was it really physical? And I asked the guys afterwards. I go, hey, was that a physical game at all? And they go, oh yeah.
I'll say from watching on television, it looked like a pretty physical basketball game, and it looked, and like you said, looked like they held their own, and you know, kind of took it to Marquette at times too. Now, you'll probably play more physical teams than Marquette, I think, but it was a pretty physical basketball game.
Yeah.
And you know, so what? How many years is this now for you? What season of calling Dayton basketball is this for you now?
This is season 43.
43. Wow, that's 43 years of calling Dayton basketball. Does it get old?
No, gosh, no. Because the travel's got, you know, the would really wear you out is the travel, and the travel's got, you know, I'm not having to hang around airports and 2-hour layovers and, you know, all that. You know, we had a trip down here yesterday where I got on a bus at campus. The bus rolled up in front of the plane at the runway. We walked out across tarmac, up the stairs, onto the plane, landed, and vice bus waiting for you right there next to the plane when you got here. Boom, boom. You know, that's easy, and that's the only thing.
Nice.
Old is the toll of travel, but no, it's great.
Well, that's awesome, and you know, you've gone to all these wonderful places. You're in Orlando this year. You've gone to Maui. You've gone to the Bahamas. You know, what was like one game, whether it be in one of those locations or, you know, something else, you know, what was one game where you, in the middle of calling it, you kind of just look around and you go, wow, like this is what I get to do for a living?
It was a long time ago, but I'll go back to that NCAA tournament run in 1984. Beating LSU and then beating Oklahoma, you know, and then going to Pauley Pavilion next. I think that was a long time ago. But it was pretty special. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you also are the voice of the Flyer football team. Oh, this is typically a basketball podcast, but I will give you a few moments here if you want to talk about the Flyer football team and the season that they had this year.
They were an injury away from winning the whole PFL and be going someplace this Saturday for a playoff game. Bryce Schondelmeyer broke his collarbone first half of the Butler game, came back, lost the set. You know, they, you know, lost that game. Had he played in the second half, or I think actually they might have missed their safety, Vinny Forenzi, more in that game. But if Bryce had stayed healthy, then I think they win that game. I think they win at San Diego. I think they beat Drake. Maybe even if they didn't win that Butler game, but they don't lose more than one game in conference. And I think they're the champions because their defense was just outstanding. They, you know, the guys that had to play behind him did their best, but I mean, he was like third in the nation in pass efficiency when he got hurt. He was really playing at a high level, and I think this, you know, this program under Trevor Andrews, they've improved incrementally year to year. 7-4 this year was better than 6-5 last year. So they're moving in the right direction. I think retention can always be an issue. Last year, Dayton's best defensive player, Gideon Lampron, transferred to Bowling Green. And lo and behold, he's Bowling Green's best defensive player. So it's not, you know, these guys that get under recruited end up putting some film and numbers together, and then other programs come in and can poach them away. So that'll be interesting what happens in the offseason.
All right, we'll leave you with this. Obviously, Dayton, Georgetown, Thanksgiving night, going to be a big one. A lot of the Flyer faithful will be down there, I'm sure. A lot of us, my family included, will be in front of the TV watching Dayton basketball instead of Bengals Ravens. How do you see this weekend going? What do you got for me? And that's where we'll end this interview.
I see this as I'm treating this as a rematch of the 1984.
I think my dad's doing the same thing.
West Regional Finals.
I was trying to look this up. Is that the last time we played Georgetown?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I thought so.
And I think that this time Dayton will hit first and will physically be up to the task and will win this game by virtue of they were the tougher team.
Well, there you go, Flyer fans. Flyers over Hoyas. Revenge for 1984. And then, you know, we'll see what happens. Obviously, BYU and Miami play in the other game. But if you get this one and BYU beats Miami, well, then there is your opportunity for a marquee win.
Yeah.
We owe a lot of teams, Larry. That's the thing. We owe a lot of people across this country, but we'll handle them on another time. This week, it's about Georgetown, BYU, and Miami. Larry Hanskin, the voice of the Flyers. Really appreciate
you can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and fleet services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Appreciate you coming on the show, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
All right, glad to do it, Drew.
All right, thank you. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Talking Out Loud. Want to thank Larry Hanskin once again for coming on the program. We'll be back next week with another episode. And, of course, please do subscribe to the YouTube channel, the Talking Out Loud YouTube channel. The interview with Larry will be the first video to go up on there, hoping to get more videos and things like that on there as we move forward throughout the rest of the season. But that's going to do it for me. Hopefully the Flyers can get a win over Georgetown on Thanksgiving night, move on and play either BYU or Miami and get another win there. And we'll be back next week. So please stay tuned and thank you for listening. We have 2 rules on this show. They are wear red and they are be loud. And we'll catch you next time on Talking Out Loud.